Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 97 of Season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is David Brook of Blueprint Review. Welcome back to the show, Kimo Sabi.
Hello, glad to be back. I was going to say, I should probably explain my Kimo Sabi comment at the end of the last episode. But yeah, in... When Die Hard was shown in the UK on TV, what you'd quite often find, depending on the channel and depending on the time it was on, but back in the kind of I guess early 90s or whatever, when it was shown, they would quite often edit films for edit films for swearing sometimes on TV in the UK. They were very strict, and I can always remember the most memorable kind of replacement. I mean, sometimes they'd beep it out. On TV shows, they'd usually just beep it out. But occasionally what they'd do is actually swap words around. On Die Hard, whenever they showed Die Hard, instead of the classic Yippee-ki-yay, and we know what comes next, they would actually swap that for Yippee-ki-yay Kimo Sabi, which is just bizarre. I don't know why, but that's what they would change it to. And I can remember, actually, this reminds me of Repo Man, the film Repo Man. On that, they actually, Alex Cox, the director, he kind of personally recorded his own kind of swear-free version. So he came up with all sorts of crazy words to do it. And I think on some of the Blu-rays of release of that, you can watch it with the kind of Alex Cox's censored track, and it's supposed to be quite funny. I'm not sat and watched it all the way through, but it's supposed to be quite amusing.
Oh, wow. Very cool. All right, so episode 97 begins with John taking a position under the desk and ends with glass shattering once again. So, I mean, this is a completely action-filled minute. You know, we will have very little dialogue, if any at all. So yesterday we ended things with John defending himself against the three remaining terrorists. We still have Hans, Carl, and Franco that are still shooting at him. Fritz is no longer in the mix. He's dead by the elevator bank. And then we get John rolling around and taking a position under a desk. And you see that he's ready to fire. Then we see Franco move from one position to another and trying to get closer. John opens fire and begins to shoot glass. There's like a glass pane in front of John that he shoots out. You know, he's not like even shooting anything further from him. And as Franco is moving towards him, he ends up shooting him in the knees. And I mean, it's quite graphic, the squibs that they do here, you know, showing, his knees and legs being, I guess you can say, shredded by the bullets. And then we see him fly up in the air and he lands with his head slamming and smashing into a broken window frame. You know, he's not getting up from that one. That's for sure. You know, I was thinking to myself, he gets shot in the knees, but just doing your kneecap someone, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to die. But when they lose their balance and, you know, become Superman and start flying through the air and end up landing, you know, their head landing in the middle of a pane of glass, I don't think he had much of a chance.
No.
You know, at this point, you know, they definitely found some very intriguing ways to kill the various terrorists along the way. You know, each of them is quite unique.
Yeah, and that is some good squib work, as you mentioned. It's, you don't often see kind of knee squibs. It's probably quite painful to have done that as a stuntman as well. Because there are a lot of them going off, just like because it's still a little explosion. Yeah, and they'll protect themselves in different ways and things, unless it's some kind of dummy or something. But it looks like someone moving. It's very convincing.
Right. Right. And I mean, and then the way that his head goes through that glass also, that's just, you know, he like the head goes through the glass, and the way that he lands, you know, they spared us, and at least they didn't, you know, have his head like fall off, you know, get like guillotined from the way that he lands you know, right on that.
Yeah, it could well have done. Yeah.
Yeah.
It reminds me of this. Well, this whole scene, but especially that moment, reminds me of a Police Story, the Jackie Chan Police Story, because I can remember when, because the finale of that is crazy amount of glass getting smashed, and I think the crew reportedly redubbed the film Glass Story just for that final scene, and this scene definitely reminds me of that, with all the there's an incredible
that,
amount of glass.
And that came out 3 years before this one, so you can't even say yes. that it was copied, unless it's copied the other way.
Yeah, maybe. If you actually watch, interestingly, speaking of that, if you watch Tango and Cash, actually, at least two of the set pieces are pretty much totally ripped off Police Story. There's the bus kind of stopping right in front of him, and then bad guy flying out, I think. And then there's also a kind of a zip wire time a bit, which is, again, pretty much ripped off Police Story. So it definitely had its influence on American action movies.
Yeah, but do you think that they took the idea of the glass from there?
Possibly. I don't know. They don't use it into. They use it, I guess, more interestingly here with the whole kind of foot side of things. It'd be interesting to see. As I say, I mean, we'll see where we get to in the script later. But it'd be interesting to see how much of that was planned.
Right. That's true. I mean,
I don't know.
If you go into IMDb, there is no connection between the two of them, you know, in the connection section.
No. But I don't know. It's possible. I think in Police Story, it's less about shooting glass, though. It's more smashing people through glass. And in this, there's only really that one shot. So I don't think, so possibly not a big influence on it, but you never know.
Okay. All right. And at this point, Carl then takes cover behind the desk. And Hans, we see him lunge forward onto the ground, you know, which is not, I mean, they show that his character is quite agile. You know, he's not just a businessman type, you know, terrorist slash thief. You know, he is into action also. So like he jumps forward and grabs the gun.
Although watching that shot now, just now, you can kind of tell it's not... It's certainly not Alan Rickman.
No, for sure not. That I could have told you before. Yeah, I mean, you can see when he lands on the ground, it looks like the guy's wearing a wig.
Yeah, and whenever they're hiding someone's face, really obviously, it's never going to be the actor.
Generally, but you think that's Alexander Goodenough behind the desk?
No, probably not. Although he's less famous, maybe he's got a stunt background. You never know with some of those guys.
Right. Okay. And he's a dancer.
Oh, yeah. He might be then.
Yeah. So then Hans grabs Franco's gun and John continues to shoot at them. And then we hear Hans scream in German. And then he hides under, like, behind a computer bank. Like, there's this huge computer bank that he did. And I love the music in this minute because the music just helps raise the tension. You hear music and gunfire. Those are the two things that are very apparent throughout this entire minute. And then Carl sticks his head out and John opens fire, you know, hitting the desk. And there's like a computer monitor there that has all these sparks flying, stuff like that. So, I mean, John's a pretty good shot. I mean, no one here is good enough that they're hitting everybody. But, you know, hitting all the people on the other side. But they're able to cause a lot of damage, I guess you can say. To, you know, there's going to be a pretty big cleanup at Nakatomi later on, you know, after this all gets settled.
Although after everything gets blown up at the end. Yeah.
Okay, but they don't know that yet, you know. And at this point, you know, you can see all these, like, computer banks behind them that it's written on them, control data. You know, there's I think you can see like four or five of them that are like that, and makes you wonder, like, what, you know, what type of data is this company Nakatomi storing, you know, that's so important to them on this level of computers. You know, we never know exactly what they do in Nakatomi besides, you know, have a whole bunch of bearer bonds.
Yeah.
You know, but maybe they're like a high-tech company, you know, that here they're able to store like 2 megabytes of data on these huge computers. You know, who knows? Now, what I find funny is that you know the way that John like is shooting at them, and you know he keeps hitting various things along the way, and you know Carl keeps sticking his head out, and you see papers flying all over the place. Now, do you think that the idea of saying that it's control data is that like a is that you think that's like a placebo? You know, you have the control group.
Possibly, I don't know.
Maybe it's like an in joke, the idea that okay, this is the data we control, you know, that type of thing.
Maybe.
And then Hans looks out from behind the computer, and John starts shooting at him, and John keeps alternating between shooting at the area where Carl is, and Carl keeps popping his head up. You know, it looks like a whack-a-mole, the way that his head keeps popping up, and John shoots to the area, and his head goes back down, you know, and stuff like that. And then we see lots of glass shattering, and we even see glass falling on Franco's corpse, you know, that's just sitting there, which you got to give a lot of credit to the actor that he's not moving as they have all this, you know, glass fall on him.
That'll be sugar glass, but still.
Obviously, I'm aware of the fact that there's sugar glass, but since you brought up sugar glass, I was going to wait until a little later to talk about sugar glass. But we might as well talk about sugar glass. So, what do you know about sugar glass, David?
I know of it. I don't know exactly what it is. It's basically a safer way of using of kind of recreating glass to be smashed in movies. And I guess I presume it's made out of sugar. I don't know. But it's just less when it breaks. It doesn't have the sh as sharp an edge as the glass, so it's less deadly. I've heard it can. It still can be dangerous. You've got to be careful using it. But it's a lot safer. You couldn't just you can smash your head through it without quite the same kind of risk as you would a proper sheet of glass.
Okay, so sugar glass, which is also known as candy glass, edible glass, or breakaway glass, it's a brittle, transparent form of sugar that looks like glass. It can be formed into a sheet that looks like flat glass, or even as an object, such as a bottle or possibly a drinking glass, things like that. You know, we've seen a lot in movies, you know, where someone will shatter a bottle or throw a drinking glass and stuff like that. It's made by dissolving sugar in water and heating it to at least the hard crack stage, which is approximately 150 degrees Celsius or 300 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's part of what you use in the candy making process. So you have glucose or corn syrup is used to prevent the sugar from recrystallizing by getting in the way of the sugar molecules forming crystals. And then they add in cream of tartar, which helps by turning the sugar into glucose and into fructose. All right, because the glass is hygroscopic, okay, it has to be used soon after preparation, or it will possibly soften and lose its brittle quality. So maybe in movies you've seen, you know, people jumping into glass, and you know, we see it bending a little bit. It could be that it's just sitting on the you know, on the set a little too long, or something like that. So it's used quite often to simulate glass in movies, sometimes in photographs, in plays, and it's also used in professional wrestling. Some people use it to make sugar sculptures or other forms of edible art. And in the TV show Breaking Bad, it was used as a prop for methamphetamine, where there would be characters who would be eating it on set. So there would be it would you know they'd be eating sugar glass through that. So yeah, there's a lot of sugar glass here.
Okay.
And we're gonna get into even more. You know, we're not done with that yet. You know, and you know, they give us a long lingering shot of the broken glass on the ground around Franco, with the blood pooling around and stuff like that. I mean, it actually we get about 4 seconds of that, which is a lot for them to show that. You know, I think that that's partially the foreshadowing of, okay, this is glass, this is dangerous. it can cause a lot of blood, you know.
Yeah, well, it's the whole sequence. I was going to mention this about the sequence. Is kind of this whole scene shows what I love about film editing, and just why I do it myself. Is it's all about telling the story through montage. So you've got that shot of the glass with blood all over it, and then you cut to you've got a shot of you've got a couple of shots of hands noticing, looking at the glass and realizing it. So the reason you see that glass with the blood in it is it's showing Hans's thought process, thinking, oh, okay, we get glass everywhere. This is really going to hurt, possibly even kill John. So then he has the idea in a second of shoot the glass. He tells his henchmen to shoot the glass. And so it's all showing his thought processes just through cutting to certain shots. And you see that time. I think that's also why you have the shot of the dead body of
Franco.
Franco, and then the glass falling on him. Again, it's showing there's a body there. There's glass falling on him because we shot above him. It's all showing what Hans is seeing, so that we understand his thought process, so that what he does isn't just random.
Right.
It's all about making sense, and you get that a lot in this film. It's kind of the mark of a good film is telling the story through shots, through montage, or through camera movements, rather than just writing it all down and just explaining everything to the audience, because that's not good filmmaking. That's good. You may as well read a book if you're doing that. So it's not really doing what films are supposed to be doing.
Right. That's true.
I like little moments like that. They can be too obvious sometimes. You could argue there's a little too much back and forth between shots of glass and shots of hands. You kind of get the idea earlier than that, but. But it's not. It doesn't overdo it too much. It's not comically over the top.
Right. And then Hans realizes this whole idea, and then calls out to Carl, and starts speaking to him in German. And Carl can't hear him, doesn't understand him. I mean, it's pretty funny the way that it works. You know, it's like he's looking at him as if, what are you saying to me? What? Why are you bothering me at this point? Or something like that. And then we get a quick shot of John, who has taken the bag of the detonators off of him. And it makes you wonder why he's doing that. Like, well, you know, he knows that that's what he needs. You know, that's his insurance against Hans. So I think here it's just because the plot needed it. You know, I don't think there's any rational reason that John would take that off. It's not as if, you know, he'd say to himself, okay, it's going to be easier to run without it or whatever. He needs it. You know, but for some reason he takes it off and just leaves it on the ground. And then we go back to Hans and we get another shot of him looking at Carl. And then he starts speaking in English and says, shoot the glass. And as he's doing it, we hear lots of the sound of broken glass, which again, I goes back to what you were saying before about the storytelling. You know, that even via the sounds of things going on around them, even if it's ADR'd in or whatever it is, they're still letting us know that, okay, glass is breaking at this point, you know, and it's going to be very integral over the course of the next few minutes of the movie, you know. And right before Hans speaks to Carl and says to him in English, he like rolls his eyes, you know, which is really funny. It's like, oh, I got to say this in English. You know, I think it's more for us at this point also. You know, just an excuse that Carl couldn't hear him. Because, like, how can Carl understand him easier in English as opposed to in German?
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Unless Carl wasn't German. You know, that type of thing. If he's, you know, he's speaking to him in a foreign language, then okay. And then the two of them start shooting, and they shoot lots and lots of glass that starts shattering all over the place. And that's the way this minute ends. So did you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
No, I think I kind of covered it already. I just want us to talk about the editing as usual.
Okay, well, the script, again, like I did yesterday, it's very descriptive. So I'm just going to read everything that's in here for this minute. It says, John ducks and dodges as bullets ping and ricochet all around him. Ducking, rolling, he fires at Franco. McLean's bullets rake his middle, throw him over a desk, his weapon flying. He slides right into a glass door. It smashes around his head. Bright arterial blood fountains up. McClane, hope rises at the prospect of an equal battle. His face suddenly falls as bullets fly in from an unexpected direction. He turns and sees Hans has reappeared and snatched up Franco's weapon. McClane fires, moving, trying to keep from being flanked. One of his shots shatters a glass panel, raining down shards near Hans, who escapes with only superficial scratches. Hans looks at the glass around him, gets an idea. He shouts to Carl in German, "The glass! Shoot the glass!" And saying this, he demonstrates. Carl follows suit. So the truth is, I like it in some ways better the way that the shooting the glass works in the script than the way that they filmed it, because it's that Hans looks at the glass around him. You know, he's not looking at what happened to Franco. He sees glass. It looks down. You know, there's glass shattering on him, and that's what gives him the idea. You know, and the fact that he only says it once to Carl also says that this was something that they decided to add in for us, of have him speak German and then speak English and stuff like that. And for him to show Carl what he wants him to do by shooting is also good. You know, I mean, because if you pay attention, he actually shoots first in the glass. That's not true. So he tells Carl and Carl starts shooting. So in the movie, Carl starts shooting first, the glass. He doesn't like show him, but then he joins in quite quickly and starts shooting also. So, So every Tuesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Holiday Edition, where my guest will give a little story, adventure, misadventure, something that happened to them along the journey of life that's somehow related to a holiday. So what, you got a story for us, David?
Yeah, a little bit. Nothing too major.
Nothing about nothing about Khan this time, right?
No, unfortunately not. No missed airplanes or anything. Funnily enough, I missed an airplane this summer again.
Oh wow!
But not my fault. It was the airline's fault then.
And it wasn't your fault last time either. It was traffic, you know.
True. But no, I'm going to talk about something that happened. I'm not sure if you'd call it a holiday. That was my only issue. Is it? I've used the word holiday as referring to any kind of special day, but we don't actually get a day off for it. So I don't know if I'd call it a holiday.
No, it's fine. That's perfectly fine. Whatever you got cool, is good for us.
But I was going to mention Bonfire Night, which is something very particular to the UK. So I don't know if everyone knows about it.
I've never heard of it. So you can explain to me.
Never heard of it. Right.
Never heard of it. You can explain to me what it is.
On November the 5th.
Wait, there's Guy Fawkes Day, isn't it?
It's Guy Fawkes Night, yeah.
It's also called Bonfire Night?
Yeah. That's what I call it. Maybe it's a Yorkshire thing. But yeah, Guy Fawkes Night, Bonfire Night, whatever you want to call it. So on the 5th of November every year in the UK, people have big bonfires and they do fireworks. They don't do it as much anymore, but they used to have an effigy of Guy Fawkes, which they burn on the bonfire, which is kind of a bit creepy. And the whole thing is to kind of is in memory of when this guy, Guy Fawkes, tried to blow up the Houses of Parliament, and he was stopped and his plot was foiled. And so it's supposed to be celebrating, which seems weird because nowadays everyone hates the government. And it seems strange to celebrate the fact that somebody didn't destroy the government. but as with most celebrations, like, everyone just uses an excuse to have fun, get together with friends and family. It's always nice getting around the bonfire on a cold November's night. And everyone loves fireworks. And so I guess I had a little bit of a story of one bonfire night. It was it was very early in when I was first kind of seeing, at the time, my girlfriend, who is now my wife. We've been married for a long time. And but she came over. That was her first bonfire night. And she came over and to my parents' house for bonfire night. And they had loads of friends around. And we did a big, they have a big garden. So we had a big bonfire and things like that in there. And we all got ready for the fireworks. Everyone loves the fireworks. And my dad is always in charge of the fireworks. And he likes to make a big do of it. And we were doing some of the fireworks. He was lighting his Roman candles and all this kind of jazz. And then it got to kind of the big finale of the fireworks night. And it was one of these big kind of cube fireworks where you've got a big, like a kind of box, and it has loads of fireworks in it. And you light it and it does all sorts, like, it fires all sorts of stuff out. So it was like the big grand finale. I thought, oh, awesome. Dad lights it and then runs, steps back. Then when he lights it, we realize, I can't remember if it fell over or if he just actually put it up the wrong way, but it starts firing at us. And it's like,
oh, wow.
So everyone's like running out the way. And there's like a big sliding kind of patio door that is the closest to exit. And my wife would never, ever forgive me because this was early on in my relationship. I showed my true colors because every man for himself, I just ran straight for that door. And according to my wife, I closed it behind me.
Oh, wow. You did a George Costanza?
Yeah, basically.
Oh, wow.
Instead of saving her and getting her in safely, I was like, and just ran away like a big wuss. There's actually, I don't know if you've seen the film Force Majeure.
Yes.
That's kind of like that situation in a way, but more dangerous, I guess, where there's an avalanche coming and this guy runs to save himself and doesn't try and save his family or his wife.
I've seen also the American version of it with Will Ferrell, which isn't as good.
Oh. I didn't realize there's a... Oh, yeah, no, yes, now I do realize there's a remake. No, I've not seen the remake.
It's nothing... But, don't... it's not that
great things. No. But the original's worth checking
out. Yeah, it's worth checking out, but it's definitely not even close to being as good as the original one.
So I kind of had my own version, mini version of that on
it's,
one.
It's called Downhill. It came out in 2020. It's with Will Ferrell Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Random. But yeah, so my own version, I mean, we're still married now, so it didn't destroy anything, but it will always be a shameful, shameful memory for me. But I still enjoy Bonfire Night.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. All right. So you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you?
So I write reviews over at blueprintreview.co.uk. Lots of classic world indie cult kind of movies usually. Check it out.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. So, David, you feel like coming back again tomorrow?
Oh, yes.
Maybe see what happens with all the shattered glass.
Yes, more glass.
More glass. More gunshots, more glass. Anyone that's what, come back tomorrow and you'll get a lot more of that. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.